Hello, Dr. David Clark. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Great to be with you.
So, you are the president for the nonprofit group, the organization of Association for the Treatment of Neuroplastic Symptoms.
That's correct.
I'm very excited to learn more about this. Can you tell us what is the story behind this organization and how did it start?
Well, it turns out that although most people assume that pain or illness are always caused by disease or injury, that there's a whole other category of symptoms caused by the brain. And this is in turn linked to physical changes in the nerve pathways in the brain. And those are brought on most commonly by stress or trauma or by unrecognized emotions or by other challenges in life that can happen to anybody. And there were a number of us scattered around, primarily the United States, but also in Europe, who had found our way to diagnosing and treating this condition. And we were getting very successful results in people who had been quite severely ill in many cases, some of them for years or even decades. And we all came together at a conference in Michigan in 2009, and we just had a wonderful time swapping stories, finishing each other's sentences, sharing ideas, talking about how excited we were about the results that we were getting with patients. And we decided we had to found a nonprofit to teach as many other people as we possibly could, both patients and professionals. And we've been going for 15 years now.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's great. Do you guys still get together every couple years? And I'm sure that the organization has grown so much since then.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah, the popularity of this is just exploding. And we had a conference in Boulder, Colorado last year, for example, that drew 270 people from 8 countries. And we're having another one this year, September 28th to the 30th in 2025. That is, if anything, going to be even larger. At least that's what it's on track to be. And it's another one of these meetings where, everybody is swapping stories and finishing each other's sentences and sharing ideas. But the difference now is that we've got leading scientists from around the United States and some of them international who have tested these ideas with rigorous scientific trials and found striking results. The Boulder back pain study, for example, that was discussed in some detail at last year's conference, they took people who had back pain for an average of 10 years and put them through one of the new neuroplastic recovery therapies. And in 1 month, their pain scores dropped by 75% and stayed down at that low level for the full year follow-up of the study. And that was all they got was 1 month of treatment, 2 sessions a week for 4 weeks. Nothing like that level of improvement had ever been seen before with just talk therapy. And now we've got research from other places across North America that have confirmed and corroborated this, from Halifax, Harvard, Detroit, UCLA, showing these same kinds of outcomes if you are paying attention to the issues I mentioned earlier, stress, trauma, emotions, the long-term impact of adverse childhood experiences is a big one. Anything that you went through as a child that you would never want a child of your own or a child that you care about to go through.
Hey, interesting. Wow. So with that, what kind of conditions or symptoms would be flaring up from what you just mentioned, the stress and childhood traumas, etc.?
Yeah, it's I'm glad you asked because it's a remarkable list, literally from head to toe. Migraines, dizziness, ringing in the ears, technically called tinnitus, visual disturbances, trouble swallowing, temporomandibular joint or trigeminal neuralgia pain, difficulty swallowing, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel, many cases of long COVID. Many cases of chronic fatigue, pain in the spine, the low back pain is a huge one, pelvic and genital pain, joint pain, certain kinds of rashes. I'm sure I'm leaving some out. F functional neurologic disorders. The list is virtually endless. It's anything where your doctor is not finding a conclusive explanation in terms of organ disease or structural damage, or if they are finding something that they suspect is the cause of your symptoms and they treat that condition and you don't improve as the doctor expected. That's another category where what we call neuroplastic symptoms, which is the condition I'm talking about here. Neuroplastic symptoms are very prevalent in that group. The neuro refers to those physical changes in the nerve pathways I was talking about, but the plastic part of the term is actually very helpful because it refers to a capacity for change.
Okay, that's great. And I did hear that you recently had to change the name, and there was a process with that. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we used to call it psychophysiologic disorders, referring to brain or mind to body. And we knew that that term would be very well understood by healthcare professionals. But the public kind of looked at the word psycho and didn't respond to it as well as we might have liked. And at the same time, the Institute for the International Association for the Study of Pain came out with the term nociplastic for this kind of pain. So they absolutely, this prestigious and well-regarded international body, understood that this condition is very real, but the term they chose for it, nociplastic, was not one that would immediately grab the public's understanding. So we decided we would change it to neuroplastic because it means the same thing. It refers to the nerves in the brain that have physically changed, and we see this on MRI studies of the brain who in people who are suffering from this condition. And the plastic part again, referring to the brain's capacity for change. The brain will change, you know, when you learn to throw a baseball. It changes when you learn to ride a bicycle, but it also changes in response to stress, trauma, emotions, and so forth. And this can literally happen to anybody. People who are as mentally strong and capable as anybody else absolutely can get this.
Yes, wow. Yeah, I understand that one in five people suffer from chronic pain that is medically unexplained or untreatable. Do you have any advice for, well, I know that you have advice, but for people that are listening to this right now, is there some simple steps that they could use just to move forward and better understand what's happening to them?
Yeah, there's a whole lot of steps actually, but you're right. It's one in five adults, so that's 50 million people in the United States alone that have pain or illness not explained by organ disease or structural damage. It's actually two out of five people that go to their primary care physician looking for answers about their symptoms. And when the diagnostic tests are negative or they don't show any problems that are explaining the symptoms, a very simple next step is to go to the symptomatic.me website and take the 12-question self-assessment quiz. It takes less than 3 minutes, and it's set up in a way that the more questions to which you answer yes, the more likely it is that you have a neuroplastic condition causing your symptoms. And then, you know, if that's the case, we have lots of treatment options. We've got videos and courses and recorded conferences and evidence-based books that we can refer people to. Lots and lots of resources for people to gain knowledge about this because it turns out that when it comes to this condition, knowledge is healing.
Absolutely. Well, I'm sure it is very relieving for them to gain some understanding with what's happening after years and years of trying to figure out what's going on with them.
Yeah, I have to give you one example of that, Brittany. It's the first story in my first book, which is called They Can't Find Anything Wrong. It was a woman who was hospitalized at a prestigious university 60 times over 15 years with no diagnosis. She saw a dozen specialists. They even had a psychiatrist come and talk to her who pronounced her mentally healthy and sent her back to her medical clinicians. But all her attacks of illness, which consisted of severe dizziness and vomiting, they were all connected to direct or indirect interactions with her abusive mother. And her mother had been verbally and emotionally abusing her since she was 3 or 4 years old. She's now 50 years old, and her mother is still doing it. And the amount of emotional tension and power connected to that was obviously enormous after 47 years, but she wasn't recognizing it consciously, so it was manifesting in her body. But as soon as we helped her to understand this, to see how all her attacks of illness were connected to these interactions with her mother, I can still remember her looking up at the ceiling and saying, "Oh my God, I can't believe it." And that was her light bulb moment. And in her case, she stopped having attacks after that.
That's amazing. That's great. So for triggering more of these symptoms, it would be something similar to what you're talking about, the re-abuse by her mother, and then that would flare up the symptoms again for everyone.
Yes, that's right. There can be all kinds of triggers. The most common is definitely having a an adult in your life today who was involved in mistreating you in some way when you were a kid. And it doesn't have to be out and out abuse. Many of my patients were, as children, under a lot of pressure, but it was from parents who meant well, who wanted the best for their kids, but they kind of took it too far. And they just put so much pressure on the kids, and the kids tried so hard to live up to the expectations, and they just found themselves frequently failing to live up to those expectations. And that can have a number of consequences for people as adults. For example, they can become perfectionists. They tried so hard as kids to manage whatever environment and whatever challenges they were faced with that as adults, they are on a treadmill they never step off. They are very critical of themselves. They tend not to take a lot of time for their own joy. They're so busy working to meet the needs of other people in their lives that they don't put themselves on the list of people they take care of. And that catches up with you after a while. There also can be a lot of emotions that people have that come from being mistreated as a kid, but when you're in the middle of that as a kid, you don't have too many options. And so people take those emotions and they bury them somewhere. And the emotions are still in there, and they don't have a way to reach your conscious awareness. So they manifest themselves physically in the form of symptoms. And the level of severity can be every bit as bad as what you get from organ diseases and structural damage. I've had many people in the hospital with this. One of them, I was asked to see on hospital day number 70. She was getting morphine around the clock in massive doses for unexplained abdominal pain. And it was all coming from a significant stress in her life that she didn't fully recognize. And once we were able to bring that into conscious awareness and begin finding some solutions for it, she was out of the hospital in a week, and she was off of all the opioid medication in about 30 days.
Wow, that's wild. That is fantastic. Changing lives, that's great.
Yeah, that's one of the wonderful things about this work is that not only can you alleviate people's symptoms, but when you do that, you change a lot of aspects of their lives. You change many of their personal relationships. If there's somebody toxic in their life, for example, they become much stronger at putting boundaries around that person. If they have a tendency to form close personal or romantic relationships with people who have lots of problems, they find after they've done this work in many cases, they're able to move on from that and form relationships that are more mutually supportive.
Oh, that's great. And I understand you offer the courses online and different videos. Do you work at all with medical professionals to try to get them to gain more insight to what's going on here?
Yeah, absolutely. We have lots of resources on our website strictly for teaching professionals, both medical and mental health, because the best outcomes from this are when medical and mental health professionals collaborate with each other. We need the medical clinicians to do the evaluation to make sure that there's not a structural damage issue or an organ disease going on. And then to ask a couple of questions about, what's happening in your life right now. Are you having some significant stresses that connect in some way with your symptoms? Were you under stress as a child? Did you have experiences you wouldn't want for a child you care about? Just asking a few of those questions and then sending them on to a mental health or behavioral health professional who's had training in the kinds of issues that can make people physically ill. Not every mental health professional has had that background, but we supply a lot of that education on our website, and then they can get the attention to the issues that are most relevant for physical symptoms as opposed to mental health symptoms. We often refer to mental health professionals who've had this training as stress experts. They're not really helping you with some kind of mental health concern. They're just dealing with a source of stress that you might not have fully appreciated how big it was. And the outcomes from this are tremendous. Even people who've been ill for a long time, severely ill in some cases, can make excellent progress. One of my patients had been having abdominal pain for 79 years. And she was a nurse, actually. So she had abundant medical diagnostic evaluation over the years without finding any cause. But all of it was connected to a trauma that she had gone through at age 8. She was now 87. And once we uncovered that trauma, we were able to help her with that, and her symptoms, began to fade away.
Wow. I guess if people are trying to figure out what is going on with their body and then they're taking additional medications and trying to see what works, that's probably something you have to deal with as well with the other medical professionals and just get back to the basics and see what's going on.
Yes, we're happy to have people continue to work with their doctors and whatever the medical professionals are recommending. But if those treatments are not working as well as the doctor expected, then we ask people to give this an investigation, give it a good try, take the 12 question quiz, look into these issues, see what we can uncover. And if we are finding sources of stress, trauma, emotions, other challenges that haven't been fully addressed, then to use the treatment techniques that collectively we call neuroplastic recovery therapies and see if you start making progress. And if you do, that's pretty solid evidence that you are on the right track, both with the diagnosis and with the treatment. And the need for the medical treatment is going to fade away. A good example is somebody who's been in chronic pain. They're taking opioid medication. We don't change that right off the bat, but we do investigate for the sources of stress I've been talking about, begin to address those. And then as people improve, just like the woman I was asked to see on hospital day 70, she turned down her own opioid dose, and actually, in her case, turned it down to zero, after 30 days.
Wow, and in 30 days. So once people get started on the right track and are more aware of their emotions and how it's affecting their body, this could be a fairly long-term fix. It won't take long.
Yeah,
Yes.
that's right. Yeah, once people understand where these things are coming from, the solution tends to be a long-term one. Life being what it is, there can be stresses in your future that can lead to temporary relapses. But many of our patients who find this is happening, they are actually using the physical symptoms as a signal from their mind that there's a stress going on that they need to take care of. So it's they're actually, instead of having fear of their symptoms, they are viewing it as a form of communication that they can actually respond to and address and make the symptoms go away much quicker the next time around.
Wow. So I'm sure everybody is so pleased and relieved to finally have some answers, and I'm expecting that they are telling everybody from the rooftop, their friends, their family, and trying to get everybody feeling better.
Yeah, it's remarkable how often somebody who has recovered from this wants to tell the entire rest of the world. And that extends to physicians as well. I taught a small group of doctors. They actually took one of the online courses on symptomatic.me. And there was just three of them working with a psychologist, but it absolutely transformed their practice. And one of the doctors took me aside at a conference later that year and said that these concepts had put the joy back into her work. And they were so enthusiastic that over the next 2 years, they taught 70 other doctors in their community how to do this. Because all of a sudden, you have to imagine this. You start off before you know any of this, having 40% of the people coming through your door as a primary care doctor with no organ disease or structural damage to explain their symptoms. These are the kinds of patients that burn doctors out. But once you know what to do about it, you turn the patients from somebody who's burning you out to somebody that you love to see because you can make them better.
Yes. Oh, that's so rewarding. That's great. I
Yeah.
read that you've written a few books and you have a few films out as well. Can you tell us about that and where we could find them?
My first book is called They Can't Find Anything Wrong, and that's written for patients. It's got about four dozen stories in it that illustrate the spectrum of different kinds of stresses that can make people physically ill. The next book was called Psychophysiologic Disorders, and it is written as a textbook for professionals, but it's written without jargon. So anybody that likes to read about science can really appreciate that one. The films, we've got documentaries that I helped co-produce. One is called All the Rage, and it's about the film's director who suffered stress-related back pain. Another one is called This Might Hurt, and it's about a particular doctor in Michigan that does this in his regular practice. And then the third one is called Pain Brain, which is a about a 1 hour film about the Boulder back pain study and all of the people involved in that and how surprised they were at the remarkable results from that study.
Interesting. Well, I know back pain is definitely rampant, and I'm assuming that, yes, is that something that you deal with, the majority of what you deal with? I understand there's a broad spectrum, but I can imagine everybody I know suffers from back pain.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And there was a study that was published just in the last year looking at over 200 patients with back pain, trying to figure out, well, how many of them have neuroplastic back pain and how many of them have pain that's based on a damaged structure or inflammation of one of the structures. And what they found, surprising even to me, was that 88% of them, it was neuroplastic. It was being generated by the brain and was going to respond to one of the neuroplastic recovery therapies that's on our website. And then even of the remaining 12%, half of those, it was a mixture of neuroplastic pain and structural pain. So it was even higher than 88% would benefit from this mind to body approach. But it's not just back pain. Back pain is one of the most common ones out there for sure. But irritable bowel syndrome, certain patients with GERD, fibromyalgia, GERD being a gastroesophageal reflux disease, fibromyalgia, long COVID, chronic fatigue, a very, very long list. The only common denominator is that People with this neuroplastic condition tend to have more than one symptom at a time. If your symptoms are multiple, if they are located in different parts of your body, if they have different qualities to them, if they move from place to place, all of those are clues that there's a neuroplastic cause.
Right, that makes sense. Just the wires firing off in the wrong direction and being controlled by your brain.
The nervous system goes everywhere, but a tumor, for example, or an inflammation, it's typically going to be s sitting in one spot. It's not going to move from place to place. Another one is if your symptoms get worse under stress, or if they get worse when you're just thinking about something stressful, that's also a clue that it's a neuroplastic condition.
Wow. Well, this is great. I'm very impressed. What is your plans for the future? I know you have the conference to look forward to, and you're just reaching more and more people to let them know about this and how it can help them. Do you have anything else coming up in the future?
Oh, lots of things. We sponsor a lot of research, and there are going to be more research reports published in the next couple of years that are already reaching a critical mass where we can present them to the healthcare professional community and just point out that this is now something that it is high time we address in routine medical practice because it's so many people and the solutions are out there and the suffering from this is now completely unnecessary. We're also putting together an online forum where people can, who are members who support the Association for the Treatment of Neuroplastic Symptoms as members, will be able to communicate with professionals and with other patients. We have monthly Q&A sessions with international experts on Zoom. And people can get their personal questions answered if they are members of the ATNS. We're having our next conference in Boulder, Colorado, as you mentioned, September 28th to the 30th in 2025. And we hope to continue having these annually. We're going to probably have over 300 people this year, and it can be for professionals, but also for the interested public. We try to keep the jargon to a minimum. So lots of things. We've also got a white paper coming out. We did a national survey of people's understanding and attitudes about neuroplastic symptoms involving 1,500 U.S. adults, and that's going to come out at the same time as the conference. So we're always doing new things, and our goal is that the care of this condition will be just as routine and just as successful as any other form of illness.
That would be great. The world is definitely moving towards this direction, and people want answers, and they just need to, yes, learn more, be aware, put themselves first, and find a solution, live a better life.
Yeah, and it's completely possible. Again, even for people with severe conditions. I do a podcast of my own now called The Story Behind the Symptoms, where I interview people who have suffered from this condition. One of the early ones who comes into mind right now had this for 25 years and made a full recovery. And she was suffering symptoms all over her body that were just baffling her doctors. Other people have been bedridden for, periods of years, who've been able to completely turn it around. One woman whom I spoke with just recently had been completely flat on her back, barely able to get to the bathroom and back. And when she recovered from this, just recently, she climbed Mount Rainier in the state of Washington, 14,000 feet. It is just stunning, the turnarounds that can happen from this approach.
Wow, that's incredible.
If I hadn't seen it myself so many times, I would have found it difficult to believe. In my early years, I didn't get any training about this from my very traditional Western-oriented medical education. The University of Connecticut, great school, gave me a great education, but like every other medical school, they didn't really mention how powerful the brain could be in creating symptoms. And I thought I knew what I was doing as a physician until in my eighth year, I encountered a patient I didn't know the first thing about diagnosing or treating, and she had neuroplastic constipation. She was averaging one bowel movement per month, and I had no idea how to diagnose that person, but I stumbled on the fact that she had been severely abused as a girl. I got her connected with a psychiatrist that was interested in mind to body connections. She cured that patient with less than 3 months of weekly counseling sessions. And when I found out about that, I was shocked. And I had the psychiatrist, whose name was Harriet Kaplan, teach me how she thought about this. And that's how I got my start in this field. And the reason I kept going is that it was just such a wonderful thing to see people get better.
Yes, that's amazing. I love how you stumbled across that and just wanted to find a solution for her and just kept going with that. Oh, that's great.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a real eye opener for me. You know, when you get to the eighth year of your training as a physician, you know a lot and you think you know everything. And so to encounter a patient like that, about whom I was completely clueless, was a shock. And I just thought if I wanted to be a complete doctor, I should find out how Harriet Kaplan had cured this patient. I never thought I would do it myself, but it turns out there are very few Harriet Kaplans, far fewer than are needed. And that's why my organization exists, is to train more of them so that there will be enough to meet the needs. This is, you know, the people who have this, they are almost twice as numerous as diabetics. And yet, very few healthcare professionals have had the background to manage their condition as successfully as it deserves.
Yes. Can you tell me more about the connection with the brain and the nervous system and how that kind of works?
Yeah, there are magnetic resonance imaging studies in numbers of different patients with different kinds of neuroplastic conditions that show that the signals coming from the body are being processed in ways that are different than they are in healthy people. And that is what results in the symptoms. The brain is physically different. So this is a collection of symptoms that are not, you know, in your head or imaginary. They have a real physical cause. It just happens to be in the brain. Something else regarding the science of this that people should understand is that if you burn your finger on the stove or whack your thumb with a hammer, you are not getting a pain signal from your finger. What you are getting is a damage signal, and it comes up to your brain, and your brain has to actually decide if it's going to give you a pain signal to warn you that your finger is in danger of further damage. And it is making a decision. It's not a conscious decision, but it is it's nevertheless a decision about whether to give you a pain signal or not. Another example of this, where it's deciding not to give you a pain signal, is imagine yourself running from a predator and you sprain your ankle. Your brain is most likely not going to give you a pain signal from spraining your ankle until you get to a safe place. It's going to prioritize escaping from the predator. It's going to decide, okay, there's damage in the ankle, but I'm not giving a pain signal because I want the owner of the ankle to get to safety first, and then you can feel the pain. So your brain is actively managing whether you get a pain signal or not. Another example of this is a construction worker who impaled his boot on a nail and was instantly in agonizing pain, was rushed to the emergency room, given morphine intravenously. There's a picture of this in the British Medical Journal about 30 years ago. They gave him the morphine, then they carefully cut his boot away, only to find that the nail had passed neatly between his toes, and he didn't have a scratch. And of course, as soon as he saw this, pain instantly went away. But seeing the nail coming up out of his boot, looking like it had just gone right through his foot, his brain decided you are getting a pain signal.
That is crazy. Yes, it absolutely makes sense, though. Unbelievable.
And the same kind of thing is happening in people who are under more stress or more trauma or more emotions or have some other life challenge that is beginning to get too much. And typically people don't realize just how much.
Right. Yes, until it starts manifesting and all of these, yes,
And why am I getting this migraine, or why is my back hurting? There must be something wrong with my back. And that's not always where the answer lies.
yes, absolutely. Nope, that makes sense. This has been fantastic. Can you just fill us in with anything else that we need to know? This has been so great, and I've learned a lot. And tell me everything that should
Yeah.
we should all know.
Thank you, Brittany. Yes, it is something that can happen to anybody. It is absolutely real. And you can find out a whole lot more at the website symptomatic.me. We are a nonprofit. We are founded and led by volunteers. None of us is doing this for the money. And the 12 question quiz can, in less than 3 minutes, give people a really good idea of whether any of this applies to them. So I would recommend that to people as a starting place.
Yeah, that's great. How long has this organization been around?
Well, we started working on it in 2009, and we got our formal incorporation papers from the Internal Revenue Service in the United States in 2011.
That's great. Well, it's definitely needed, and I'm sure it's very much appreciated by everybody and their loved ones struggling with this. And yes, keep up the great work. This is great.
Thank you very much. Social media, you can find us also at symptomatic.me and our YouTube channel. We've got videos of the Story Behind the Symptoms podcast there as well.
Excellent. Well, that's great. There's lots of resources for people to get more information and follow their path to health and recovery.
Thank you so much, Brittany.
Yes, thank you so much for spending time with us, Dr. Clark. And I look forward to hopefully learning more and spreading the news.
Thank you.
Thank you.